Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want.
Audible.
Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Hey, how about that for being on cue? And you can tell we are here live at Life Coach Radio Network, and we've got some studio gremlins today. So thank you, Russ Terry, the CEO of Life Coach Radio, for that recording, kind of jumping in right on cue with the radio or the website address for audiblebooks.com. My name is Leanne Parsons, and I am the Walk Your Talk Coach here on Life Coach Radio Network, and I am super excited to come to you two times at a minimum every month on this network to inspire, challenge, and encourage you to really outlive your life. And I am very privileged every month to introduce you to some amazing people that I have had the awesome honor of meeting, getting to know, establish relationships and friendships with, and even collaborate with over the years. And I am very excited to introduce you to my dear friend, Zara Phillips. Zara is here with us tonight, and we are going to talk about adoption and the arts. Zara is an author, yes, a singer, a songwriter, a writer, and a performer. Tonight, we're going to chat about life. We're going to chat about being adopted. We're going to chat about the arts. We're going to even chat about Run DMC. And we're going to talk about her one-woman show called Beneath My Father's Sky. So any of you out there that have a desire to call in and ask either myself, Leanne, or Zara any questions, I want to offer up this phone number to you. The number is 646-716-9397, and I'll bring you into the queue and you can chat with us. So again, welcome to Walk Your Talk with Leanne tonight, and welcome Zara Phillips.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It is
online,
so,
anyway.
I know, right? Here we are. We're in different parts of the country. And because of the blessing of our wonderful technology, we get to come together as if we're sitting in the same room with each other in my studio here tonight to chat about arts and adoption and to share our stories. And so, Zara, you and I met each other a couple of years ago in San Francisco. And I got to see your one-woman show there. And I was so taken by Beneath My Father's Sky that I wanted to get to know you better. And so I started following you on social media. And then we really connected when we were both at the American Adoption Congress Conference in Boston this past year. We were able to share laughs and tears and meals and really some beautiful conversation. And I was just really struck by your passion for adoption, for serving the adoption community, and for really making an impact on the community at large and our culture at large, just like I have. And so here we are as adoptee sisters live finally tonight. And I would love it if you could share with our listeners, Zara, just a little bit about your adoption story. And, you know, what really sets you apart as a performer in this arena? You've got an amazing message.
Well, I think, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. It's always great to talk about this stuff and get the message out, you know, because I think for me as an adoptee, I always felt so alone before I had any connection. I never talked about it. So when I was younger, I never talked about adoption. I never read a book on adoption. It was not supposed to be an issue. So it was very secretive in my family. It wasn't really, you know, I wasn't really allowed to talk about it because it would hurt my mother particularly. So I grew up really just keeping so many feelings inside, being very silent and really acting out as a teen and using drugs and alcohol and running away from those feelings, which were really intense. But I could never have told you at the time, oh, this is because I'm adopted, or, you know, I have, because there were so many other things going on. And so a lot of my, I did music. I actually started doing music when I was 20, or even before, a little bit before, but I ended up working for like known bands in London when I was 20. So I always had a passion. And actually, I used to write when I was really little. I wrote my first poem when I was 4, because in England, you go to kindergarten when you're 4. And they had it in the hallway. It won some kind of a prize. I always remember my mother kept this little poem I wrote. So it was obviously in me from very, very young. And then I ended up joining bands and traveling all over, which was pretty amazing. But I was running from myself. And when I finally, after lots of things going on in the family, I have an adopted brother and he was a heroin addict and it was all pretty crazy. But it came from, you know, living in this beautiful home and my father's a judge and all this kind of stuff. Finally, I got sober and that's when it all came up around the adoption. It was like putting down, I had to put down the substances to feel really what was going on. And within 4 months of being clean, I remember saying to somebody who was helping me at the time, I have to find my mother. I have to know my story, because in my mind, it was something terrible. I always felt like, you know, I was a mistake. I wasn't meant to be here. She gave me away because I was bad. I wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't good enough, clever enough. I mean, it was terrible, negative self-talk. And so that was sort of the beginning. But what I didn't do, which I always urge everybody to do, is don't make my mistake, is I didn't get the right kind of help when I began to search. And I still hadn't read a book. I just went off and thought, you know, I could handle it. And I had no, I think I joined one group in London at the time, one kind of support group. But anyway, as most people know, when we do reunite, a lot of feelings come up, you know. For me, I mean, and I've read this, it really is when the grief starts, when you start grieving. And that's what was happening to me. So, yeah, so, and I didn't realize. All I knew was these feelings were so intense. Like, I'd see my mother and I'd leave and I'd be howling, literally howling all the way home, like that primal howl. And I didn't know, I knew it was connected somehow to the baby part of me. And so, you know, I had an intense reaction to all of it. I don't know why some adoptees might not have such an intense time. Mine was really challenging. And, you know, it really became a journey of, you know, the, over the years of just really understanding where everybody's coming from, really understanding the grief and the loss and, you know, getting rid of those old thought patterns of not supposed to be here. And you know, and I met my birth mother. Today we have a good relationship, but it was very difficult at the beginning because I didn't have support. I didn't understand when we met, we're acting out on each other all our pain. You know, now I know all of this stuff. So it was pretty intense. But thank goodness today we get on great. I have a half brother, half sister. They have children just in the last few years, actually. They're only like, you know, 2 and 4. And I love being an auntie, I have to say. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So that's,
well, I bet they love having you.
Yeah, I just wish I was in the same country, you know, but now I Skype and stuff, so that's fun. And, you know, my birth father, you know, I found out my birth mother was young. It's that is, you know, one of those stories, young, not married, teenager, gets pregnant by some Italian guy who was in London studying and going, you know, being a waiter and studying, learning English. And she gets pregnant. So it was one of those, the normal, you know, she's hidden away. And those awful stories too for birth mothers. She was only 17. So it's nice now because she's still young.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, you mentioned, and thank you so much for your openness and your honesty about your adoption story. You know, it's super important, I think, that these adoptee stories are told. Because just like you, there are so many of us, me included, it wasn't, or we weren't free to talk about our adoption when we were children. And, you know, I often equate it to like a river flowing that has been dammed up.
Yeah.
Right. And then all of a sudden we kind of grow up and we start to realize that there's more to us and that these questions are very real and that that place in us that we really do need to find out those answers. And then it's like removing, right? Removing that dam, removing those rocks away so that river can flow freely again. And, you know, and with that, go ahead.
You know, I was going to say too, I think a lot of it for me, and I've heard it with other adoptees too, is this loyalty that I had towards my mother was so, you know, I didn't tell my parents for 2 years that I had found my birth mother because I felt so much guilt and so much worry about my adopted mother. Because again, my adopted mother wasn't, you know, it makes me very sad because nobody was really given the right support. You know, my mother had a load of feelings around me searching. She was terrified. And, you know, she never met my birth mother. I've known my birth mother since I was 22, and my mother died 7 years ago. She never met my birth mother. They spoke on the phone one time just before my mother died. Because it's, you know, I always say to adopted parents, the crazy thing is, once I searched, I then could feel more connected to my adopted family. And I hear this over and over again. It's when I didn't know where I was from that I felt disconnected from everything. And for me, it was once I knew my birth mother, I could then appreciate my adopted parents in a different way.
Oh, absolutely. And isn't that one of the myths that the reason why those of us who are out here speaking, me as an advocate, a coach and a radio host, you as a performer and a writer and a speaker, this is why we do that work, isn't it, Zara? That, you know, it's so important that we dispel these myths because they're very real. And I don't
think,
you know, the culture, the culture back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, people did not understand what the ripple effect of an adoption situation would be. And now we're growing up and we've grown up, we've been through addictions, we've been through making poor choices, whether it be in relationships, with drugs or alcohol, you know, even just with our own lives, career choices, different ways that we're held back because of not really knowing who we are. And sometimes it can affect our self-esteem, our identity.
Very much.
Right?
So. Very much so.
Absolutely.
And actually in England, they're now saying that closed records, closed adoptions is a form of emotional abuse. They recognize in England that no person should be made to live in a situation like that, that it really is like an emotional torture. And it sounds so dramatic and people will be like, no, of course. I was a little kid and I wanted to know where I was from when I was like six, seven, from when I could understand. And it would have been very beneficial for me to have known at that age. But the silence, and I think maybe this is why I became a performer and a writer, is it really has been about finding my voice and being, you know, over the years, speaking out, finally, after being of holding it in for so many years. I'm finding safe ways to express it through poems, you know, when I was little, and stories. But it was always about that. I mean, I look back at some of the stuff I wrote when I was younger. I was like, oh, my God. It was so intense. But it was always about that underlying piece. You know, now I can put a name to it.
Right.
So, you know, some of us are just, go ahead, yeah.
Oh, no, keep going. It's great.
I was just going to say some of us are born searchers, I think. You know what I mean?
You know,
like,
I agree with you.
Some of us just want to know.
I agree with you so much, Zara, because I was the same way. And, you know, you talk about how when you were younger and you would write and you would start to wonder, right? Hmm. Same deal with me. I remember wishing, dreaming, and fantasizing that Olivia Newton-John was my mom. Okay, so we have these, speaking of performers with beautiful voices just like you,
oh,
so
from
funny. Another country, right? But she, that was kind of my fantasy person, was, oh my goodness, because I was blonde, she was blonde. She had a great smile. People said I did, except I had horrible buck teeth, but I did get braces eventually. But, you know, it was one of those things where you just go, oh, I just so wanted a connection. I so wanted
yeah.
to know, and I wanted to have a voice. And, you know, you shared something really beautiful just a minute ago where you talked about finding your voice and learning to express your heart, your mind, your thoughts, and your feelings in a safe way.
Yeah.
And really claiming, right, really claiming your identity. And I just love that you brought that up. And, you know, if it's okay with you, I would love to introduce our listeners right now, Zara, to one of the songs, because it goes along so much of what we're talking about right now with identity, and that is the song that you did with Run-DMC called I'm Legit. And, you know, it really does put voice and passion to your message. So before we play that, can you tell us a little bit about that experience? And
yeah, that
about,
was great. That
yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you about Dee. So basically, I used to live in LA before I lived on the East Coast. And I met Dee because he was doing, you know, DMC is a late discovery adoptee. And when he found out he was adopted, VH1 did a documentary on his search. They followed him on his search. And he, a friend of mine in LA was like, well, you know, I want you to be in DMC's. We had a little support group, adoption support group. She said, well, you know, we want the group to be in his VH1 thing. So that was, so we did that. We filmed that, got to meet Dee, got on great with him. And literally 3 weeks later, I moved to New Jersey. And my same friend called me and I said, I don't know anybody. I don't know where I'm going. And she goes, Dee is going to come and pick you up. He lives in the next town from you. I didn't even know. I thought he lived in LA. I didn't even know he lived in New Jersey. And said, he's going to pick you up and take you down to Harlem to show the documentary. He'd love you to go with him. So he came, picked me up. Talk about being, you know, the white British girl. It was hilarious, actually, because I didn't understand what anybody was saying. And they're like, yo, what's up? What's up? I'm like, hi, how are you? It was hilarious. But and that sort of, I started going with Dee, showing the documentary, and we'd spend a lot of time in the car, getting stuck in the New York traffic. And we just really built a really lovely friendship and just talked a lot, you know, about all of this. And he was still in shock about finding his mother. And then people were doing a lot in New Jersey about opening birth records. And because they knew I knew Dee, people were contacting me, bring Dee to the Senate House. So I would get Dee. We went down a few times and we, what's the word? I'm going blank. We went in there and talked about everything. And he even rapped. He even did a rap in the Senate House. It was brilliant. And then when we were driving home one day, he just said to me, you know, we need to do a song. And that was really cool because I was like, wow, I'd never done anything with a rap artist before. I'd co-written with people, but never with a rap artist. And, you know, he really is a legend. And I was like, oh, my God, how am I going to do this? So I had played him something that I had with a lot of strings on it, and he was like, I love it, I love the strings, I love the whole vibe. So I sort of wrote the song based on that, And the lyrics just came, and I tell you, I played it to him, and within 10 minutes, he had those raps. He's amazing to work with. And then we went in the studio and got these wonderful musicians on it, top-notch musicians, and it was just fantastic. And then got to make the video, and what I love about the video, a lot of adopted people were involved, obviously, in the video, and Scott Hancock, he's adopted, he edited the video. So, you know, it was just like the community was all doing it together. So it was pretty thrilling. Yeah. And then we did a live performance at one of the AAC conferences in Boston, which again was fantastic.
Right. That is thrilling. I love your word, and I just love and adore your voice. Just hearing you talk is so soothing. So thank you. And what a beautiful story. You know, Zara, what came up for me when you were just sharing that was once you found your voice, then opportunities started coming your way when you started talking, and then meeting Dee and having these opportunities to share your music with the world now is incredible. Mm. And, you know, that's
such a passion and such a gift. Mm.
Right.
Yeah,
when
I mean,
you were
it's
four,
like people. Yeah, who knew, you know, here I am years later, you know, doing, you know, getting old really to be in the music business. And then I end up doing a song with Run DMC. Like, you just never know where things are going to go.
Right. And a lot of that is stepping into your confidence, stepping into your identity, right? And finding those missing threads that were there from early on. And so I would love it. Is it okay with you if we play that song right now? We're going to
see
how our technology is. We're going to see how this is working. And so, boy, listeners, hold on to your hat. This is a beautiful song by Zara Phillips. I Am Legit.
At night I can't sleep. I toss and turn.
Some nights I'm tossing and turning in my bed.
At night I can't sleep. I toss and turn.
Imagining your face, but I know what I'm up against. Feels like I'm climbing a mountain, swimming upstream. Hold me, I'm falling.
Mystery, and I just wanna know my history. What's my purpose and destiny? Why these secrets is kept from me? I'm living my life from chapter 2. Wanna start at page 1 like you all do. Are you looking for me like I'm looking for you? This chapter of my life is called I Wish I Knew.
Evening comes, can you hear me? I need to know you and tell.
turn. The contrary reality is what I wanna learn. But they are telling me I can't see the proof on a little piece of paper that holds the truth of who I am and what I be. Yeah, I'm living, but I'm missing a part of me. I have a right to know where I come from, cause it's my human right just like everyone. I'm not ashamed that I was born and how I came into this world, it is not wrong. My identity must identify with every part of me until the day I die. In my own country, I am living a lie, cause they're ashamed of me and I don't know why. It's the lies that cause all the guilt and shame, but the truth will set us free and kill all the pain. I'm legit, not illegitimate, and I will not quit. This rhyme I must pick until I get my original birth certificate. So give it up. Wanna know my history? Why these secrets is kept from me? Wanna start at page one like you all do? This chapter of my life is called I Wish I Knew.
Hey, Zara, I'm going to stop that there. For some reason, we're having a technical. Could you hear the technical funny?
I didn't hear it, no.
You didn't hear it? Oh, good. Okay. For some reason, on my end, it was cutting out. And so I was afraid that it was doing that all the way around. And
oh,
that is
no,
such a
I
cool...
didn't hear that.
Oh, good. Well, awesome. The next one, I won't cut it short at all. for whatever reason in my studio, it was shaky. You know what? I love that song so much, and I love how you and Dee worked together on that song, collaborated so beautifully. And, you know, that's part of that synchronicity that we have as adoptees. Like, we totally get each other, don't we? And
yes,
there is
I think
that
so.
Peace. Where we can pick up a conversation in moments, and we don't have to explain the backstory of kind of where our hearts are at. And there was some lyrics in that song that I thought were so beautiful. And it was, you know, do you remember when you are on the street, do you remember me?
Yeah.
And, you know, then, and then Dee kind of chiming in with, I want to know my history. Reality is I really want to learn. So can you speak to that a little bit and share with our listeners about those lyrics and about how those lyrics dramatically have impacted your life?
Well, I mean, it's funny, like, I don't even remember writing the lyrics. Like, sometimes when I write really fast and it just comes out, I don't even know where it comes from. You know, it's that little angel, I always call it the channel that you have, as any writer knows, opens up and you go blur, and then you're like, wow, where did that come from? It's almost like not from oneself, but all from one's inner subconscious. But I just, you know, I think for me, and from what I've heard from so many other adoptees over the years, it was always that she's never going to remember me. I really believed that my birth mother had forgotten about me. And I think through my life, I just thought people would forget about me. If I didn't see somebody, they were going to forget about me. And my friends are always like, no one's going to forget about you. Like, they just think it's hilarious because they don't understand where that really comes from. And of course, you know, then finding out my birth mother had thought about me the whole time, and that birth mothers never do forget. You know, I never knew that, and I wish that somebody had told me that when I was younger. So, I mean, I think that's really where that comes from. And Dee, he just wrote that. We just sat together. I was playing the guitar, and the next thing, he's just come out with the whole, you know, it just poured out of him. And I love his rap. It's wonderful. About history, just wanting to know one's history. And, you know, the crazy thing is, in England, birth records are open. So there really is, like, people say to me, well, why would you care? You're not even from this country. But I couldn't believe when I moved to America, I could not believe that for a country that is supposedly so far ahead in so many ways, is so far behind on these kind of things, these issues. I was shocked. And I think it is barbaric. I absolutely feel it is criminal. It is a human rights issue. And I can speak as somebody from England, and that's why I've gone so many times and talked, in front at Congress, because I just say to them, I am from England. I am from a country where records were opened and nothing terrible has happened. We don't go around shooting our birth parents if we don't like them or we don't get a response. We are respectable people. And I've said that so many times, you know. So I think that's why I just couldn't believe it. It's like, no, I'm very into fairness. What is just? I'm like a hippie.
Hippie. That's okay. Yeah. I love about you. Yeah, it's really true. It is a justice issue, and it is a civil rights issue. And, you and I totally stand in agreement on that. These records really need to be open because it is core to our identity. And, you know, absolutely. I can imagine that writing that piece, doing the song with Dee, performing it, speaking like you do, it's pretty cathartic for you, I bet. Really healing.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful.
And, you know, it's probably why it came so easy for Dee when you guys were working together, too. It just comes out once we release that voice, that healing can happen. But until then, if it's stopped or stifled or silenced, then oftentimes it's incredibly challenging to heal.
Yeah. No, it's true. It is. It's very, very true. It is a great way. I mean, I always say to people, I don't know how people that are not artists deal with their feelings and try and stay sober at the same time. Because for me, as somebody in recovery who is sober, I'm like, how do people live without, you know, and my friend's like, we just get drunk. That's what we do. In fact, recently my friend was like, you know, God, I need a drink. And then she's like, wow, you really can't do that, can you? I was like, no, I can't. And this is what I do instead, you know, is because
absolutely.
I don't know how I would function otherwise. I wouldn't function otherwise.
Yeah, and you didn't and you weren't because you did need to go into recovery, right? So it was time for Azar to get sober. And you shared something really great at the beginning of our interview today. You shared that once you put the substances down, you began to really feel. So could you speak about, because a lot of people are so afraid to talk about adoption and addiction and how incredibly woven together they are. Would you speak to that a little bit as a woman who is on the other side and in recovery?
Yeah. Well, I think for me, I had avoided all feelings for years because they were too overwhelming. I couldn't even function. Like, basic things were too overwhelming for me. Paying a bill when I left home was too overwhelming. It was crazy. But I was brilliant in a crisis. It was the little things. It was too much. And the self-hatred, the negative talk, it was like mental torture in my head. And so when I stopped, first of all, I had an amazing group of people that reached out to me. When you go into 12-step program, the people you meet are incredible. Talk about brothers and sisters, they are there for you. And I actually met a man that really helped me a lot, who was a birth father, interestingly enough, and that's a whole other story. But in terms of the feelings coming up, you know, I think recovery really is about learning to know what to do with those feelings. I mean, I was in a place where I didn't even know what a feeling was. That's how out of touch I was with myself. And I would say to somebody, they'd be like, how do you feel? And I'd be like, well, I don't know. You know, it would take me days, and then I go, oh, I think I'm sad. Oh, I think I'm happy, or I think I'm this. I mean, I was so far removed from it. And then the grief started really coming up, and I knew that it had been there all my life. And it was pretty scary, but I just had to find safe places to go with it. And I think what's really important, if anybody is out there who is putting down drugs and alcohol. I went and found my birth mother, which was really not the best thing to have done without the right support. And then eventually I left England. I think it was all too much for me and went to America. And then I saw a therapist who specialized with adoption. And she was adopted herself. Because these feelings, I mean, I don't think people realize the intensity and how, you know, you can feel like you want to kill yourself. You know, it's that dramatic of going back, finding your story, meeting your birth mother. These feelings can be overwhelming and overpowering, and especially if you're doing it without a substance. So I'm always cautious with people. Like when I work with the teens and they're all like, I want to go and find my mother. That's what they say to me. I know that's not going to fix them. Because we all know that even when we find, yes, it really helps and it heals, but it's not going to fix the hole. The hole is there. Meeting my birth mother at 22 is not going to fix my hole, you know, the wound. The wound was already created. It'll help heal. But I still have to, on a daily basis, even today, be the one to parent myself and to, you know, self-care. It's all about self-care and compassion towards oneself. It's a whole journey. I mean, geez, it's taken me years to figure this stuff out.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'm answering your question.
No, you know, this is so great, and you brought up some really key points and that I really want to touch on, because you talked about, even at the beginning of the interview, you said you need to get the right kind of help. And you shared that when you were kind of going right through your addiction and before you became sober, you found a counselor. You know, you were working through all of this stuff when you came to America, who was adoption sensitive. And how incredibly
important is that?
Well, in
America, I didn't find them till America. Yeah, no, I found them in America, not in England. I wasn't going to the right people. But it took me, when I came to America, I found somebody. I was so, like, far removed from my stuff, I didn't know what I needed. And it was, you know, I mean, it's sort of hard to put into words, but I knew the feelings were familiar. It was like I ran away as a teenager for so many years. I acted out for so, like, all my teenage life, really, from when I was 13, 14, I was, you know, off and running. And then at 22, I stopped, and these feelings are coming up, and it was like familiar. I remember this. I remember, I don't like this. That's what I used to drink and use on. And then it was like, how do I let this come up? And for me, what I really have felt for me is it's all about grief. And I feel that the grief is never recognized. As kids, we are never told, I am so sorry that you lost your mother. That is so sad. What I was told was, how lucky that you weren't left in an orphanage. How grateful you must feel. And I'd look at people and I'd think, I don't feel grateful. I don't feel grateful at all, because I couldn't at that time. I couldn't. I had too much pain. Today I can. But no one can feel grateful. No little kid can feel grateful when they're grieving for the loss of their mother. It is not possible to feel that. And for me, this whole journey is about grieving. For me.
Right. And I love that. And, you know, we all have our stories, and obviously we're not going to get to every little piece of the different challenges and myths and mysteries around adoption, but I so appreciate you being so honest about your story, Zara, and about sharing it, because, you know, I think one of the issues that I hear a lot as I am coaching, doing radio shows, talking with others within the tapestry of adoption, is that oftentimes a child is treated like an adult. So we propose to a child this real adult issue of adoption, and talking about that gratitude piece, where we haven't even acknowledged what adoption really is, right? And so I think that the more we speak and we share our stories, we share our music, we put arts to adoption. You know, I have part of my process is creating a tapestry. And so that's what I have some of my the folks that I work with is they create a tapestry of their lives. You know, you do it through song and words and music, and I do it through words and through creating a tapestry. And so when we look at the different mediums, right, that help us to express that, that provides an avenue. Like you said, how does an artist process, or how does somebody who's not an artist process all this, because it is so complex? Yeah. Isn't it, art?
It's so complicated.
So, it's such a big deal. And you have offered just your beautiful voice and your ability to communicate through movement, through song, and through story in such a beautiful way that I'm sure you had mentioned a little bit ago that you work with teams and you kind of go to them and you share. So could you tell us a little bit about the work that you do with teams and about why that's so important at that juncture in life where they are?
Well, it's funny. I was very drawn to being with teens, and I think just because I had such a difficult time. And somebody heard me speak from this school, a couple of schools that I go to, and the schools are specifically for children that are struggling in, you know, it's a place where they sleep out, they stay there, and there's a philosophy to these schools to help children. Well, I just think it's wonderful. It's this whole philosophy of how to help them and educate them, and a very high percentage of them were adopted. We're overrepresented adoptees in treatment centres, in facilities, in institutions, so it's no surprise to me. But one of the counsellors that was working at the school that does the family weekends heard me speak, and she was like, "You have to come and do our family weekends. We've realised," they knew nothing about adoption, and they said, "We've realised how many families we have that are, you know, these children are adopted, and we do these weekends. Would you come and help us?" So it sort of developed. I've been going into this particular school for about 4 years now, 4 or 5 years, and I'm going into another school I've been invited to next week. So I'm really excited about it. And basically what I do is I just share my story, just like share my story, adoption, drugs, alcohol, everything. And then that opens up the conversation. And a lot of these teens have already attempted suicide. They have been in treatment centers, you know, 14, 15, 16, usually around that age. Mm. And I tell them about me and I tell them about getting sober and they look at me. It's funny. Like they'll all start with their heads looking at the ground. And then when I tell them like some of the horror stories, I see their little eyes look up at me and they're like, "You don't look like you would have done that." I said, "Don't be fooled by what you see." And I tell them I'm adopted like you, and this is what I did when I was your age because of how I felt. And that's how we connect. And I just love connecting. I think it's that part of me that wishes I had that as a teen because I was so desperate as a teenager. And then I talk to them about writing. And, you know, sometimes they'll be like, "I don't write. I'm a, you know, football player or whatever." And I'm like, "Just write. Just write whatever." And we put all the lyrics together. I get them all to read out what they've written, and then we start pulling lyrics out, and I'll just play, and I'll start singing, and we do a song somehow. I always worry that it's never going to happen, but somehow a song comes together. And I also play them the DMC, and I show them the video. And I tell you, no matter what kids I have worked with, it's the same. Will she remember me? It's unbelievable. Always the lyrics, the questions. And then we present it to the parents and we write the lyrics on a board so they can read them and the parents weep and the kids are all proud. You know, it's and I'm always a mess because it's so emotional. I get very attached to these families that I see each year. It's wonderful. I love it.
I can hear your passion, Zara, as you speak about it. And I love that. And it's so incredible. You know, teen years are rough. And, working with families and some of the adoptees right now in their teens, you know, really listening to them and not being afraid of what they're going to say. You know, that's something that I wish that I would have been given. That was a gift.
Yes.
Right. They totally could have showed up for me. And it sounds just real similar for you. Here we were in two different countries around the same time frame. experiencing the same sort of emotion. And doesn't that just speak to the core issues, right? And
well, that's what I say about D.
Close our eyes. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, D and me were born the same year. He's from, you know, the Bronx. I'm from London. He's black. I'm white. You know, you couldn't get more different, but we connected because of the feelings are the same. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where you're from, the feelings are what we connect on. So I'm doing, you know, a lot more with the teens, and I really enjoy that. You know, it's interesting where it goes. And then I have this one woman show that I'm, you know, I wrote all about mothers, and I have my book where I wrote about mothers, meeting my mothers, becoming a mother, loss of a mother, and then I was sort of burnt out. I was like, how am I can't talk about motherhood anymore. It's enough. So then I have used my one woman show to deal with the fact that I will never find my birth father. Very unlikely. It would be a miracle if I did, and hey, one never knows. And I remember a few years ago really having a hard time around that. It really, it was another layer of grief of going, I'm not going to know him. Oh my God, you mean I'm going to live my whole life without knowing who my father is? Like I couldn't even, I didn't want to feel that. But, you know, as I'm getting older now, it's getting less and less likely. I think I always had the hope. And I remember sitting there saying to myself, okay, well, what are you going to do with this? How are you, you know, because I can't let it affect my life anymore. I want to be free of it. And then I wrote the one woman show Beneath My Father's Sky, which is about my relationship. It sort of takes place from where my book ended, which is when my adoptive mother died. And it starts with my adoptive mother's death and my relationship with my adopted father and my relationship with my birth father. Which sounds weird because everyone's like, well, you don't know him, but you have to see the play to understand.
You so do. I want to encourage everyone. I had the privilege of bearing witness to that play and was just so moved by the passion, the story, the rawness, and the real vulnerability that you shared during that time and about how you were able to really, you know, go deep inside with that very compassionate piece, not only to your family at large, but to yourself, which was really beautiful for me to witness.
Oh, and that was crazy at that conference in that tiny room. Oh my God, and everyone was right there. It was mad. It was wild.
We weren't in close quarters, but we felt like we were in your story with you, Zara. And I think that you did such a beautiful job, and your audiences are so blessed to be in your presence and spend time with you. Yeah, and you are doing a fundraiser for Beneath My Father's Sky that I want to make sure we talk about that, because there are people who will want to see this and know more about it after listening to today's show. So please tell us more about this whole
First, if anyone lives on the East, if anyone lives on the East Coast, I am doing the show November 5th. Back at United Solo, which is like around 40th or 42nd Street or something. And so that's great. Back at the festival, they invited me back and I decided to go back again, which is really nice. But a lot of people have asked me if it's on film. And no, it isn't on film because, you know, it costs money and I just don't have it. And I've never asked for money before for my art. So it always feels a bit weird. But I'm basically doing an Indiegogo campaign to see if I can raise money to film it. But I have a very specific idea of how I'm going to film it. It's not just going to be a one camera, you know, filming the play. It's going to be way more detailed than that. So I'm pretty excited about it. And it's going, you know, fundraisers go slow, but I also have a business plan I'm putting together and just putting it out there to people, you know. And I do believe if it's meant to happen, it's going to happen. There'll be a way that the funds will come. So,
absolutely. And so if people want to find out and contribute to the campaign that you are doing right now, how would they find that information?
Well, they can either go on to Indiegogo and just type in Beneath My Father's Sky and they'll find me, or go to my website, everythingzara.org, or find me on Facebook. I'm pretty easy to find.
Okay, good. And I'll post a link on my social media as well for your Indiegogo campaign, because it is so important. You're welcome. You're very welcome.
This is
important stuff. And, you know, adoption in the arts and the films that are being produced are absolutely rocking it right now. You know, I had the privilege of having Christopher Wilson on my show not that long ago.
Yes.
And we spoke about his film, You Have His Eyes. And, you know, it's really cool that we've got these stories coming out about birth fathers, because we forget oftentimes, we hear so much about the birth of moms, and they're radically important, but we've missed oftentimes the stories and the heart and the emotion and the thoughts that go on about birth fathers. So super great that you're doing this, and I just definitely
wish you... Yeah, because it's not talked about a lot.
Right. Why do you think that is, Zara? Why? What's up with that?
I think, I mean, I didn't even think I had a father until I met my mother. I know it's almost embarrassing to say that I never once, when I was younger, maybe one time, because I'm writing about it in something else I'm working on, but one time somebody said about your father, and I said, I don't have a father. Like, it was not even in my consciousness. And I think it's because all we think about is we can identify with a woman gave birth to us and I was in some woman's stomach. But I just couldn't get the peace until I searched. And then when I searched, I was like, oh my God, I had a father. Like, I really couldn't believe that I had a father. It's sort of funny in a way.
Actually, it's so common. I mean, I had some of those same feelings. I'm sitting here going, oh, we have so many commonalities. Right, because we don't. We were told, yes, your mommy, she couldn't keep you. And so she placed, you know, she relinquished you and we chose you is kind of what I heard. She gave you up and we chose you. And she couldn't take care of you and we can. And we love her for that and we love you. And that's all that was talked about. And so there wasn't that birth father in the equation. And so when I think our poor, you know, as I'm learning, I'm actually in some training right now about trust-based relational intervention. And we talk a lot about those neural pathways in the brain, Zara, and how the brain of an adopted child is different. It's different. The makeup, the pathways, all those connections are different for us because of some of the experiences that we didn't have and then the other experiences that we did have. And about how that really affects us, right, at the cellular level, at the very neurological level of who we are. And, you know, I think it really speaks to the fact even that you had shared about the addiction piece and that when you put the substances down, the real feelings came in and your thoughts got clear enough for you to explore this. And what a beautiful gift that you can speak to that in such an authentic way through your music, through your writing, and your work with teenagers, because that's a huge issue today with teens. And isn't that such a desire that we both have, that the teens growing up today that have an adoption experience are not silent or stopped from exploring what all of that means to them. We want to help them be able to walk into that confidently.
Yes, absolutely. And that, you know, it just makes me feel anyway that something that was so hard for me and so caused me so much pain has turned, I've been able to turn it into something. It just feels like I have a sense of purpose in my life. And everybody I feel, to make life meaningful, I feel is you need to find your purpose. And that it feels so rewarding. I mean, I get just as much from it as they do. If probably I get more, because it really heals me every time I'm with those teens. And they talk to me, you know, they just chat to me like I'm just one of them. I love it.
Well, they get very weary and tired of trying to figure out all of those questions. that they have. You know, we have those questions. Yeah. Who am I? Did she remember? Does he remember? I remember wondering if my birth mom would remember what my birthday was. I remember going, gosh, I wonder if she remembers the day. When I talk to her and I tell her, is she going to remember that that's my birthday?
Yeah.
And, you know, now from all the everything that we know that, you know, no one forgets.
They don't forget.
And we don't forget. And so, Zara, that's so beautiful. Thank you for just sharing that. And the gift that you give those teens and that empowerment, right, to really have that voice. And to be able to share it, because we do. We try to weave these threads together, and sometimes they make sense, and sometimes they just really don't. And so when we can really listen to the heart of each one of us, it makes such a dramatic difference.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. No, I love it. Mm-hmm. I love doing this work. It's very funny. It's like, I think when I was little and I used to tell my friends, you know, and I was like 8 and 9, I'm going to be an author when I grow up. And they'd be like, why? You know, why are you writing all these stories? I used to have stacks of stories that I'd write for hours. And, you know, I would never have known at 8 and 9 I was going to end up writing about adoption stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny.
Mm-hmm. It is. But it's your passion, like you said, and it's your purpose. I often talk a lot about passion, purpose, and then put it to a plan. Do something with the gifts and the challenges that you've been given, because when we serve and we give, it helps, like you said, it helps us to heal and to grow and just to even be more aware of how our unique life situations have impacted us. So I love that. You know, we've got another song of yours here that is called Red Boots. And we've thought about, what's that?
You have time to play that one?
Well, I do. We've got, because we can go a little bit over, but I would love to introduce our listeners to another song of yours and share that with them. It's about 4 minutes long. We've got about 3 minutes till the top of the hour, but my recording doesn't stop at an hour. And so this will be archived in its entirety. And so if you would like me to play that, I would be really happy to play. Would you love it? Okay, great. And then you can share with us a little bit after the song is over about that song. And then please be ready to share all of your contact information about how people can get a hold of you, Zara, okay? And then any closing comments or thoughts that you have. All right, I'm going to go ahead and play Red Boots by Zara Phillips.
Thank you.
Upon the hill, I stood so many times. I am glad to be back, away from that dry land, to see the sun shining in the trees. Not today will I lie awake forever. Not today, I say. Put on your blue coat, it's time we were on our way. I always wished I would bring you here someday. We can see all the houses growing smaller as we climb. Unravel the string, it's time for you to fly. Hear the breeze. Will we float away in this house, mommy? Not today, not today will I lay awake forever. Not today, I say. See the birds so high, circling around, they take a dive. Watch them land. If we stand real still, they might take the grain from our hand. Stay still. Put on your red boots, we're going to fly a kite upon the hill. I stood so many times, I am glad to be back away from that dry land, to see the sun shining in the trees. I say, oh, will the sun disappear and never come back? Not today, not today. Will my bed fall out into the night? Not today, I say. Will I grow so tall I can touch the stars? Can I sit on a cloud? Will I spin on a
Wow.
There's a cute video with my kid.
Oh, love that. So can you tell us this? Yeah, tell us a little bit about that beautiful song. And I just love your sound. I love your message, your passion. You're just such a gifted musician.
Thank you. Well, I just think, you know, as a mother, this is really nothing to do with adoption at all. Or maybe it is, I don't know. But, you know, as a mother, you hear your kids say such lovely things. And when they're little, just the things that they say, you know, it's so pure. And I just, some of that is, you know, things they said to me, will my bed fall out in the night? You know, am I going to grow tall and touch the sky? You know, it's all that stuff that little kids say. And I just sort of put all of that together. And I think it's my connection as a mother to these children, talking about taking them home, showing them where I'm from, you know, as a kid, taking them to places in London where I went as a child. And just sort of that feeling as a parent, passing that on to your kids. And then they were in the video. My girls were in. My son refused to be in it. He didn't want to be in it. My girls couldn't wait. Oh, they were thrilled. And, it's just a lovely thing to have as well.
A beautiful keepsake and a very much a legacy piece for you. You know, my business is Legacy Now Lived, and I speak a lot about outliving your life. And Zari, you are a woman who is doing that every day. I see you walking your talk. I see you living your legacy and impacting the world around you in such a beautiful way. And congratulations on everything that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And for your recovery and your stepping in and finding your voice. Oh my goodness, aren't we all so grateful that Zara Phillips found her voice and now shares it with the world.
I was like grateful for myself.
Oh my goodness.
I'm not grateful for myself.
Thank you. What closing? Yeah. Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for just the generosity of sharing your time here on Walk Your Talk with Leanne tonight. And so what closing thoughts do you have for our listeners tonight?
I just think for anyone that really feels alone, you know, we're never really alone. Like, the hardest thing is to pick the phone up and to reach out and to get support for yourself. But I know that that really is the key. And no one has to feel alone. No one has to go through getting off drugs and alcohol alone, recovery, deep feelings. Like, it is so beneficial to be with other people through this. And you make amazing connections with people. So that's what I would say. And if you feel alone, just message me.
I love that. And how can people get in touch with you, Zara? Find out more about your music, purchase your CD, help you with your Indiegogo campaign, and come see your one-woman play.
Yeah, so everythingzara.org and adoptionunmasked.com, which is my new name for my workshops, which we were brainstorming about, and I love it. So that you can get to my website, adoptionunmasked.com, everythingzara.org, they're all linked. Facebook, just Zara Phillips, you'll find me. I don't think there's loads of Zara Phillips. And you can see about my campaign or go to Indiegogo, Beneath My Father's Sky. If anybody knows anybody that wants to fund a film, is into film, please contact me. And yeah,
absolutely.
I think you can find me. No one's hard to find anymore.
You know, we're so not. And that's a whole other show we can do, right?
Yeah.
If you want to find somebody, you can. So thank you, Zara, so much for sharing your evening tonight, your music and your gifts and your friendship with me. And I look forward to further conversations, wonderful collaboration with you in the future, and another show, hopefully on Walk Your Talk with Leanne. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you. Take care. See you soon.
Mm-hmm. And everybody, thank you for joining us tonight on Walk Your Talk with Leanne. You can find me at thewalkyourtalkcoach.com. You can also find me all over social media, Twitter, at Leanne the Coach, as well as LinkedIn, Pinterest. Oh my goodness, what else is there? All of those places you can find us. Please reach out. I just want to echo what Zara shared. You are never alone. And if it's time for you to go from feeling alone to living alive, I just really encourage you to reach out to us and build that community so you feel that support, love, and care that you so greatly deserve. Until next time, God bless and be well.